So we couldn't come to LA without visiting one of the more preeminent car collections in the country, or maybe in the world, Jay Leno's Garage. Jay Leno, thanks for having us here. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for being had. I appreciate it.
So, you know, I wanted to talk to you about, we're here for the auto show, but I wanted to talk to you more about big picture stuff in the industry. A lot happening in 2021, an EV boom, a lot of traditional manufacturers trying to pivot that way. What's your kind of big takeaways this year as we kind of come to an end?
Well, you know, the nice thing is, at least as far as from the American side, American manufacturing is now being run by engineers. You know, in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, we brought Bill in from Whirlpool. He's going to run the automotive division. And Jim from Maytag, they're not engineers. They're market people. I can remember when Chrysler was just turning out K cars just to turn them out, and hopefully we'll fix them under warranty. And luckily, all the companies now are being run by engineers. Mary Bauer is an engineer. Mark Royce at GM, he's at Nürburgring every weekend testing cars himself, you know. Ford, you know, it's really exciting. I mean, I look at the new Corvette that just came out, and they built a $300,000 car for $65,000. I mean, the new Corvette has a bespoke engine, four cam, four valves, flat plane crank, just like all the European exotics. It's the most powerful, normally aspirated engine you can get. So I think the future looks pretty bright. As far as electric, that's the future. I mean, right now you're in the golden age of internal combustion. You know, steam ran everything from about 1810 to about 1911. And then eventually gas engines came in. You know, there was a point between 1900 and 1910, is it going to be electric? Is it going to be steam? Or is it going to be internal combustion? Everybody had about a third of the market. And internal combustion, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily the best solution. It's who gets there with the most product. You know, when VCRs first came out, Beta was superior. So VCR people figured, let's just flood the market with VCRs, which people then put out VHS tapes. Even though it was not as good as Beta, it was the system everybody had, and it became the way to go. So, but people knew electric was good in the early 1900s. It's just that most people did not have electricity, and the home could not produce the amount of electricity. It would take maybe 36 or 40 hours to charge a car, so it just wasn't practical yet. But it was still one of the best ways to power an automobile.
So we kind of reached this tipping point where electric is basically the future, and a lot of OEMs are going that way. But I got to talk about the big dog in the room. Sorry to use your production company name, but right. Tesla.
Yeah.
They are, you know, they crossed that $1 trillion valuation, which is mind-boggling for
well,
all of us.
I mean, they are probably 8 to 10 years ahead in battery technology. I mean, to me, the genius of Tesla, you know, Elon brought his Roadster here in 2007. It was only one or maybe two prototypes. And he said to me at that time, well, we're building infrastructure. We're going to build charging stations all up and down the highway. And I was going, yeah, that'll happen. You know, it just sounded like pie in the sky. But he was really the first one to, because even now you have mainstream manual. We have a new electric car. Where do you charge it? Oh, you can charge it anywhere. Well, no, you can't. You need designated charging, you know, especially if you're a unique brand, you need your brand, you know, whereas Tesla did that. You can now drive a Tesla across the country, in some cases for free because it's solar power. So I give them a lot of credit. I think they deserve that evaluation because they are that much more ahead. Everybody doing it now is sort of copying Tesla. Because if you remember, prior to this, electric cars were nice, but they were slow, and they were quote, big golf carts, you know, that type of thing. I brought my Tesla. I have one of those Tesla Plaids. It is the fastest accelerating vehicle on the planet. Oh, and you're saving the planet too, by the way. Okay, truth be told, I bought it for the performance. But I like the environmental side that goes with it. So you win. You know, if a new technology succeeds, it can't be equal. It's got to be superior. And until just the last 5 years, electric cars didn't quite have the range. Now they do. Now 400 seems to be the base number just about. I think another couple of years it'll be 600, 800, you know, even 1,000 is possible.
Yeah, you're kind of talking about getting that range anxiety and putting it away.
Yeah.
So you have that Model S Plaid. I just saw it out here
amongst
your other cars.
Right.
That's basically your daily driver now, right? What's it been like living with that car?
It's been great. I had a regular P90 before this. I had that for 7 years. It never went to the dealer, really, for anything. It never broke. It was fine. you know, I put a lot of miles on it. Then the Plaid came out, which is superior, so I sold it. I mean, I think I paid, what did I pay for that car? $130,000, and I got $95,000 for it 7 years later.
7 years later.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
That's pretty good value. You know, I got to, before we exit this EV discussion, I just got to talk about Rivian. That's another big company that just, no, I shouldn't say big, it's big from a market cap point of view, but it's only had maybe a couple hundred in sales. What's your take on that? Is that kind of the new Ford F-150, you know, Challenger?
Well, I think General Motors has a Hummer out, and I'm not a Hummer guy. I'm not a rolling coal, three-ton vehicle guy. But, you know, this was very impressive. You know, we drove it way out in the desert in California here, about 2 hours outside of L.A. And I'm driving along, and I see a deer, and the deer just goes like this. I mean, the deer stood still. I just went by it. There was no noise. There was no smell, you know, because I was really in the desert by myself, just crunching, you know, along. And I could hear ring. I mean, I heard dirt bikes that were easily a mile or so away. Like, oh, where's that annoying? Where's that? I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. And I thought, oh, how annoying that is, you know. And here I am in this 10,000-pound vehicle that makes no noise at all. It goes 350 miles on a charge. Has the latest tech. It's impressive. It's impressive. I'm curious to see how Rivian does. And again, you know, the car business is really hard because you can know electronics, but you might not know the car business. So I give Elon a lot of credit for turning out as many cars as he can. We'll see how the other people do. I wish them all well, you know, but right now I tend to go with the originator, you know.
So speaking of cars, we're in a garage with a ton of cars. I'm not sure to tell, but a good
amount.
Well,
that would be each car is actually almost 2 tons. So that's you know, so that a ton would be half a car.
Right? Half a car. Yeah. So anything new in the collection recently? Anything you've sold recently?
No, you don't sell anything. That's ridiculous. Get out. Sell something. No, I like to save them all. I don't necessarily buy rare exotic cars. I buy cars that I like. Cars that remind you of your childhood. You know, when we do our car show, not so much YouTube show, that's more about the technical aspects. But the CNBC show, everybody has a car story. Maybe when you and your dad went every Sunday for ice cream, you know, had the memories of riding in that car. You know, it just brings back a certain feeling. And a lot of times I'll buy the story as often as I buy the car. It's not a car I'm interested in, but, oh, it's one owner, and, oh, your daughter was born in this car, and then you drove it to her wedding, and oh, that, well, that's a great story. That's part of the romance of it to me.
So are there any cars that sort of slipped away that you wish you could have bought or missed?
Well, there are all kinds of cars that slipped away. The race is not over, you know. I'm happy with what I have. Like, if you want to be happy with what you have, just make sure you have enough. That's my thing. No, I enjoy everything that I have. I mean, I enjoy working on them. I enjoy the mechanicalness of them. You know, I'm in a business that's subjective. Some people think you're funny. Some people think you suck, okay? And they're both right. If I don't make you laugh, then obviously I'm not doing the job. But, oh, that guy's laughing. But when you have something that's broken and you fix it and you start it up and it runs, no one can say it's not running. You see, oh, it's running now. Yes, I fixed it. You see, it's running now. And that's sort of the cathartic sort of thing about working on things. You have a beginning, middle, and end. In show business, you don't really, you know, what is the end? Oh, it's the next project? Is it, you know? Oh, but when you fix something and it's running, and oh, then you've accomplished something. I mean, there's a great sense of accomplishment when a car breaks down on the road, you open the hood, and you fix it, and you go, oh, you feel like you've done something now. You know, yeah. Most modern cars really can't do that. When they go, well, then you can call the tow guy, but that's about it.
Something about that, working with your hands and taking your mind off everything else and just the flow of that whole working on your car. I think that's why you mentioned the YouTube channel where you actually focus more on the technical things. And for me, I when I had a car, I loved that aspect of working on the car, even the smallest little thing. So I could see why that is there's an appeal there, right? That's like an ancillary to your normal show.
Right.
The YouTube channel. So I wanted to ask you about season 9 of Jay Leno's Garage. How's that going? I know you got a bunch of interesting things. You took that Tesla out and broke a land speed record. Isn't that right?
Well, not a land speed, a quarter mile record. That only lasted
A day?
A day or something like that.
Yeah.
I think they got some hunger-striking employee who was about 100 pounds lighter than I was, and he beat me by a hundredth of a second. So, but that was funny. That was fun.
So season 9 is going well. Is there anything coming up that we should keep an eye on?
No, we're just starting our next season, I hope, hopefully pretty soon. So we'll keep it going. It's fun. It's really light. There's no politics involved. You know, it's like that, like with the game show, the Bet Your Life. Everything is politics now. And I'm so divided. Everybody's so divided. Everything's a conspiracy. But, you know, I think there's more that unites us and keeps us apart. Like on the game show, we get two people who have never met from different walks of life, and they have to team up to play the game and win. And it's fun to watch them helping one another to get to a common goal. You just don't see people working together towards a common goal. You know, when I turn on the news and I see people fighting over infrastructure, why do we need clean water and roads and bridges? This is ridiculous. Really? We're fighting over the fact you don't want to fix a bridge? I mean, I get the politics, okay, you don't want to, but really, it's a bridge. Cars are falling off the bridge, going in the water. Why are we all working together? Where's the WPA? You want to bring people in, give them jobs? It boggles my mind.
So you mentioned the new show, You Bet Your Life.
It's time for You Bet Your Life. Here's your host, Jay Leno.
All right, say hello to Kevin Eubanks. Kevin, come on out.
How did it come out? What made you decide to reboot that show?
Well, you get offered different shows, but most game shows, you know, the capital of Uzbekistan is, you know, which is not really fun to do because I don't know the capital of Uzbekistan. I don't even know if there is a Uzbekistan. I don't even know if I just made that country up. That's what I mean. That's why I don't want to do a game show. Plus, I'm dyslexic, so to this day, I can't watch Jeopardy because I go, because it's in the form of a what? It just confuses me. So this is just, really it's just an offshoot of what we used to do on the Tonight Show, jaywalking. We find people and we talk to them. And my proudest thing about doing that on jaywalking, in the whole 22 years we did it, we never had anybody say, oh, you made me look stupid, you edited it so I look like an idiot. No, you let people hang themselves. We just, can we ask you some questions? Okay. Who's the first president? Abraham Lincoln. Well, that is very good. Yeah, and then they tell me what idiots the other people are. I mean, yeah, it's fun. That's what I like. That's what I like.
I got to say, jaywalking was one of my favorite segments on your show, The Tonight Show, back in those days. You are also now going out and doing live comedy, doing shows. Mm-hmm. How is that going? Do you find it, you know, you said you don't want to tread too deep on political issues and there's a lot of mind fills out there. Is it hard to be funny these days as a comedian?
You know, never explain, never complain. If people don't think something is funny, you can't convince them. Yes, it is. You know, there was a time, if you watch even W.C. Fields movies from the 30s, the racist jokes, and the audience is laughing, and you go, people are stunned now. Or sexist jokes, or whatever it might be. I mean, I was watching something on Amazon. It was a Danny Thomas special, 1952. And Danny Thomas goes out and he says, they say someday we might have a woman president. Can you imagine that? Women throwing the hat in the ring? Have you seen the hats these women are wearing now? It's crazy. And then they had a skit where the woman is like putting doilies out. And you go, oh, my God. Oh, you would get killed. Mm-hmm. You would be beaten to a pulp. Okay, we've changed. We don't do that anymore. If people don't find it funny, can it be frustrating for a comedian, a joke you've told for years and years, and now it's not working anymore? Hey, welcome to show business, pal. That's what it is. So to me, look, I'll always side with the comedians. I think you have the right to say whatever you want. But what you have now is democratization of media. I have a microphone. Uh-oh. Now everybody in the audience has a microphone. Do they have the right to speak back at me? Duh. Yeah. Okay. Should I complain about it? No. You know, I mean, that's where you... It's always been you're on stage, you can't say anything. Well, now they can get on Twitter or do whatever they want, and if they don't like you, they let you know. Is that fair? I have no idea. It just is. So you figure out a way to work around it.
So one last quick question. How does it feel to be back in front of actual fans and people in attendance for your shows?
Well, great. I was still doing shows. You know, I would do Zoom shows. Mm-hmm. And things like that. It wasn't bad. You know, I'm one of those, look, I was lucky. This happened near the end of my career. Not to be, if this is the beginning, it would be awful, because if I didn't do the show, I didn't eat, I didn't pay the rent. I had to get some kind of a job. I'm not in that position. There are people far, everybody is far worse off. So to me, to have any sort of complaint about it, you know, and it's not like I'm here and everybody moved ahead. The world stopped. Everybody's in exactly the same place they were 2 years ago when it started. Okay, and now we're coming up, you know? So it's not like I was in an accident in a hospital for 2 years and the world has passed me by. The world just stopped. Now we catch up and resume, if that makes any sense.
Well, we're here, and, you know, we've diversified from comedy to cars and, you know, Yahoo Finance. We love that kind of stuff. So, Jay, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.